Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
From the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I give it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that?
No, Sensei.
No mercy.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your Black Panther party.
Jake LaTondres.
I am bad news. I'm going to break you.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slice.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, been saved.
Well, that's it, boys. I've been redeemed. The preacher done washed away all my sins and transgressions.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
It's showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. This is truly Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. You know, Josh Troy has been doing the opening every time we've come into this episode each week for the past 3 or 4 weeks. We made an agreement, though, that he's going to do the closing. He only has one shot to do it. And there's no editing going to be done to it.
Yeah.
Another like a little pressure.
I'm just going to throw it out there.
Yeah.
Well, Troy, did y'all catch all that rain this week?
Oh, my. You know, we did. It's funny. If you ever needed to rain in Gluckstadt, Mississippi, just go outside and either start cutting the grass or wash your truck, one or the other, and it will rain.
That's the truth.
Do people really wash their truck?
I wash mine.
You know, when I lived in Muster Shoals, Alabama, the restaurant, I don't wash my truck. But I figured that's what one of the reasons God gives us rain is to wash our truck off. But let me tell you something about the people in Muster Shoals, Alabama. My truck would be parked behind that restaurant. Those people would literally get pissed at me because my truck had not been washed. You know, it would just look awful after duck season. And I would walk out into the front just to visit table to table. Hey, how's everything going today? You need to wash your truck. I'm like, why do you care?
Well, but you see, if you keep your truck clean, people it shows people the integrity that you have to have a clean vehicle. Yeah, and you know, here's a guy that owns a restaurant. You know, it'd be like walking up and you coming to greet everybody in the front of your restaurant all drabby and dirty. With your waders on, you're just coming from duck hunting. And, you know, they drive up to see you driving up in that truck, and they're like, this guy owns this restaurant? Man, you think we need to eat here? Yeah, the food's good.
That is a really good point.
I haven't shaved since Friday. Now that we're talking about cleanliness, and cleanliness is next to godliness, depending on what kind of truck you drive. But I haven't shaved since Friday, and this morning I was standing in the mirror looking at myself, and, you know, it's hunting season's coming, so it's time to grow the beard back, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, yeah, I look kind of scruggly this morning. Belinda walks in there, and she goes, you going out the house like that? I was like, well, thanks.
I'm going to get a little sappy for just a second. I don't know if either one of you have been on Duck South the past couple of days. These pro staff videos showing appreciation.
No, I've made a note to watch them.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have written letters to those that have inspired them or taught them growing up to be outdoorsmen, to be conservationists, to be hunters. It's been really, really awesome to see. Never thought that it would be this good. So I'm going to get a little sappy for a minute while I've got you here, because I don't know, you know, I'm going to follow what I said today in the podcast with Bradley. Troy, I would not be turkey hunting if it wasn't for you. And I want to tell you, I appreciate that. Everything that you have taught me, because you made a lot of sacrifices to spend time with me, teaching me about turkey hunting all those years. Good grief. We had a lot of good times, though. But
we did.
Man,
and
I appreciate it. You didn't have to do that. I don't know if you were a part of an Adopt-A-Idiot program or, you know, there in Madison, but I appreciate you taking the time to teach me, you know, to be a good turkey hunter.
Well, the one thing that you didn't pick up on that I was teaching you and going with you, and I appreciate you inviting me, but a truly good turkey hunter would do exactly what I did, is you find a novice that's got all these places to turkey hunt, and you go with him, and you kill his turkeys. I mean, that's what I was doing.
Now that is a. I had to beg you to ever take a gun.
Because he knew if he killed something, he wouldn't be allowed back. You know.
Yeah, it's hard to low crawl with Rocky because, you know, on his hands and knees, he's 5'2".
Yeah, that's right. Hey, we're gonna go up here and crawl under this fence. No, we ain't.
I go under the first strand of barbed wire, and Rocky just goes right through the last two.
Rocky just steps over it like there's a twig in his way. Like, huh? Five barbed wire fence.
I tell you what I did. I tell you what I did one day, and he'll remember this. Rocky, you remember that day we was on that turkey, in that big cotton field.
And we called
him up, and he you couldn't get a shot, and we left him go, and we went to make a loop, and we went to cross that ditch. And if you've ever watched Godzilla or King Kong or any of those movies, where I'm telling you, when Rocky slipped to fall, it was one of the longest falls. The most graceful fall I've ever seen in my life. And once I realized that he was okay, I honestly, you know, and if you think about it, Rocky, it was that summer I had my back surgery. I think I laughed so hard I slipped the disc. I really did.
You know, Rocky is one of the only people that if he's falling, he got time to think about his landing. You know, most people
and where he's going to land. And that's what he did that day.
Landed
smack dab in the middle of the ditch. And the first thing he says to me, he says, "Did I spook the turkey?" God, that was a fun day.
I thought you were talking about the one where Kit was with us. And I thought Kit was fixing to slap me because I fell so hard that I knocked. You look, there's stages of knocking the breath out of you where you can't breathe after one breath or five breaths. Look, I'm sitting there, or the one at the very end of the spectrum where you're just going, you still get that sound out, but you can't suck back in.
And when your friends are standing there looking at you, that sounds really just a bunch of curse words and a moan.
Yeah. That's
I thought Kit was gonna slap me. I mean, Troy really was worried about me. Kit Snowball's gonna slap me across the face. But I thought you were gonna tell the day that we had to cross that wide open cotton field, so we had to get down and pretty much walk like a gobbler on our knees and squat and get over there. So Troy, Kit Stovall and the guy that owned the place, David Bowen, they, you know, they're all 6 foot or less. Here I am, 6 foot six. You know, oh, man, just get down a little bit. We can get over there. You know, they're just bending over just a little bit, you know, straight over, 90-degree angle, getting over there. For me, no. I've got to get down and strut like a turkey right behind them.
You got to slither like a snake.
We get about halfway across that field. I look at him. I say, "Ain't no turkey worth this." I just lay down in the middle of the field. Troy, look back. Are you sure? Are you okay?
But in all truthfulness and honesty, I appreciate you saying that, because for me, you know, turkey hunting now, and even since the late 80s, with video camera in hand, has always been a different way of hunting because of the video camera. You know, there was different, it's different ways you do things because of the camera. You still hunt turkeys, but the camera is the reason you go, and you may set up in a spot because you have to set up in that spot. But being able to go with you was, we were back hunting again, and we were learning new properties and learning about new places, and it brought back a lot of old memories for me, and gave me a chance to truly just go back to the way I've always liked to turkey hunt and enjoy it and watch you, you know, understand it, learn it. As a hunter, you're a big hunter. You understand deer, ducks, all that stuff, and you understood turkey hunting. But every place we hunted had a different scenario and gave us a different opportunity to do something different and learn about that bird or that terrain or that area, or if, you know, turkeys did something to us for 2 or 3 days and we went over there after the turkeys exited a field or went off on it in another tandem, we went and figured out what they were doing and figured it out, which is always fun. And I appreciate you letting me tag along. That means a lot, especially the Florida trip. And the cool thing about that was I got to make some new friends that I would have never, ever met had it not been for you.
Well, let me tell one more before we get back to Troy's story. So Troy and I are up in, I guess it's Pontotoc County, Mississippi, and we have been working this gobbler. Troy, you remember that gobbler right when you came through the gate, and that field on the right, it's about a 60-acre field. Troy and I had done everything. We had tried to hunt him midday. We had tried to hunt him afternoon, morning. Nothing worked. Finally, the last day we're staying there, Troy looks over at me. We're both leaned up against a pine tree. Turkey's 80 yards out in the field from us. It's got a little bit of a ridge right in front of us. We can see his tail fan. Can't see his head. Troy looks over at me and said, "Listen, we'll crawl out in this field. I want you to promise me one thing." And Troy's never been this serious with me in his whole life. He said, "Listen, I'm going to crawl out in this field, and this turkey's going to come running to us. And when he does, don't you let him get close to me. You shoot him before he gets to me." He's serious as a heart attack. "Don't you let that turkey get close to me. He'll tear me up." I didn't know what he was doing. This is before... this is 3 or 4 years before fanning became a fad.
Yeah.
First time I'd ever seen it. Troy out on his belly, and he sticks that fan up. Ooh, it wasn't good.
My biggest concern was, I wasn't worried about the turkey beating me up. I was worried about him getting too close to me and you shooting me and the turkey. Because I actually had that happen in Alabama with a friend of mine. While I was filming, we were shooting the pilot for Headhunters, and I was actually down there hunting with a friend of mine, Stover Perryman, and his daddy, Mr. Billy, in a turkey tournament, turkey rodeo. And we had this one turkey out in the field, same thing, with a bunch of hens, and he was leaving to go to roost. And I ran down the edge of the field, and I told Stover, I said, "You stay right here." I said, "I'm going to run up there about 40 yards, and I'm gonna pop out around that point. And I'm just going to cut, and I'm going to gobble at him. And when he turns and sees this decoy, he should come." Well, I did that, and no sooner I gobbled at him, he turned around, and that turkey ran back at me so fast that I literally just had to stand up, because I knew Stover couldn't shoot him because it had to shoot me. I couldn't get to my gun, and it was a mess. It was an absolute mess. It happened so fast.
Oh gosh! Mm-hmm. All right, so before the episode started, Troy, you asked about what Big Neat was doing. So we've been working at the barn all night. Let me tell you something: when you're locked in a non-ventilated barn with a bunch of stinking pigs, when you get out of that barn, you stink. And so it's my wife's bright idea, because she just used to this is normal life, working these pig pens smelling like crap. She said, "Hey, kids eat free tonight at Salsarita. Let's go eat there." All I could think about, man, I'm starving.
How he's putting this off on his wife. My wife's bright idea. Yeah, go ahead.
I was starving, so I'm starving. So We walk in the restaurant. The first person I see is Donnie Guest, the guy that owns Hunter's Hollow. And I walk up to him, and as I stop, a waft of my aroma comes to my nose, and it is not good. And I know, let me tell you something, if you can smell your own BO, the people around you can smell it 10 times worse.
Oh, it follows you around like a slime.
Oh, man. And
what, what did Donnie say?
He backed up. He backed up without saying a word.
He's just being bad. A gentleman.
And so we get up there to order our food, and we come back around and sit down. Of course, my kids get out of line first, and they choose the table that we're going to sit at. It's right next to some people that are dressed up really nice. We sit down, and you can see, like a cartoon, the green fumes going up in the air.
It ain't bothering me one bit, is it?
No, not at all. Not at all. This really pretty blonde and a pretty blonde was the closest one to us, and she took it. The over-under was a minute and a half. She fell under right a minute and 20 seconds is all she could take, and she got the heck out of there. She left her husband at the table.
So basically what you're saying is the LaFleur family pretty much depleted the restaurant, the Mexican restaurant, cleared it out, and just you, Roy Ann, and the kids sitting there going, having a nice fried supper together. We need to do this more often.
Yeah.
Frank Roy Ann, we stink. We stink. We got to get out of here. Well, I don't know if the people thought worse of us for the way we smelled or how fast we ate our food. It looks like we're starving to death. I mean, we're just shoving food in our mouth. Get out of there.
I'm telling you, man, I mentioned this, what, three podcasts ago. This is a TV show in the making. I mean, it's all black and white. It makes sense. The storyboard's written. It's already there. All we got to do is shoot the pilot, present it to A&E, and Duck Dynasty is nothing. With.
It's over with. I'm telling you, the only role I want, I just want to be the guy that comes on at the first and the guy, you know, that sets it up, and then the guy at the end that tells you what's coming next week. That's all I want.
You just want to do voiceover. That's it, right?
Yeah, I got that. And then, yeah, I mean, we got a cameraman / editor, Rocky. I mean, and all y'all got to do is just go be the LaFleurs. I mean, this is a done deal.
Got to get the in-law, man. That's some crazy wild stuff there.
Yeah, well. Yeah, right, see, so that, and that's no. Go ahead.
No, let me tell you this. We've been to Oklahoma the past 2 weekends, Troy, and I hadn't talked to you. Usually, Troy and I will text or talk in between these podcasts. But anyway, so we go out to Oklahoma last weekend. The kids went with us. Tell you this, we'll get back to your story, I promise. So. We see this sign that says Vegas-style buffet, next exit. So I said, man, we're going up in there to eat $5.99. I'm going, man, we kids eat free at $5.99. The Choctaw Casino in Roland, Oklahoma. I said, well, you know, most time these restaurants are set off to the edge. We'll stop this casino and we'll grab us a buffet and get back on the road. So we pull up in there. You asked about Big Meat earlier. So we walk up in this casino. And, of course, what's the first thing that's going to be there when you walk up and walk in through the doors of a casino?
Jukebox. A slot machine.
Oh, a slot machine's right there when you walk in. Man, I tell you, Big Meat stopped in his tracks. He looked up at Roy and
Big Meat looked at that and thought, man, what a video game that is right
Jesus,
there.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, all kind of bells and whistles.
If I had a video recorder, he went, woo-wee, boy, it's nowhere in my next birthday party.
He thought he was at a souped-up Chuck E. Cheese, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh. You see, there's a whole segment right there. That's one segment for the show.
Yeah.
If you wake up tomorrow morning, Rocky, and I'm standing over you, I'm in the bathroom at your house, waiting, sitting there with a video camera. Don't be alarmed. We're gonna get this.
I'm wandering around the living room trying to wire up a mic. Don't look. Don't worry about anything. We're shooting a pilot.
Oh man!
Well, I'm so glad about it. I'll finish with this. So we're sitting there eating, and all these older people are riding around in their wheelchairs. You know, they'll take the oxygen mask off for 5 seconds to smoke a cigarette, and then put the oxygen mask back on. You know, we're all within blowing all up from a lit cigarette and oxygen. But the funniest thing is we're sitting at that table eating. I kid you not. Ann Fleming looked over at us and said, "Why'd y'all bring us to a nursing home to eat?"
The food's cheap here, honey. The food's cheap.
Just imagine this episode. I mean, episode one out of the gate is Rocky takes his family to a Vegas-style buffet in Oklahoma. Like, what are we talking about? I mean, come on.
You can't make that up.
No.
You can't make that up.
You can't.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, look, last week
I can't wait to start hunting with meat. That's going to be fun.
We're going to have a ball. So, last week we left the story with you were working at you'd just taken the job, Headhunters TV, you've been working with the Madison police. But I left the show with the third question because I know this speaks highly to you, and we're going to get back into Headhunters in just a second. But Troy, you working another job, three jobs all at the same time.
Yeah, I got a dear friend of mine, Dwayne McLemore. Dwayne is from Capaya County down around western Mississippi and has a business. Years ago, he started it just as a hobby, really, just to be able to build some stuff for people. He's always been in the construction business when it comes to industrial construction. And what I mean industrial construction, welding and fabrication and stuff like that. And his background has always been working in a lot of the chicken plants in and around that Capaya County area. And he left working from the plants to work for himself, but still working in the plants as a contractor. And he had some ideas in the past of building some deer feeders and did some for a lot of people. And then it became that hobby turned into a business. And Dwayne and I have known each other several years. Got to visit with him several times when I was going through that whole transition when I left Primo's, and we got to turkey hunting a little bit together, and come to find out he knew people I knew and I knew people he knew, you know, how small the world is and the way that goes. And we just got to visiting and spending time together and being brothers in Christ. We prayed together and just he's a great accountability partner for me, but also a dear friend. And we were just talking one day about the business, and he was wanting to grow the business and make it bigger and better and stronger. And he said, I just need to find a way to do that and do it on a very small budget. I said, that's pretty easy, D. I said, in today's world, you know, with social media, we can do some stuff that won't cost nickels and pennies to get some stuff out there. He said, yeah, I don't know how to do none of that, and I don't have time to do it, and I really don't want to hire anybody to do it. I don't know anybody I would trust to do it. So we got to talking and visiting, and he said, why don't you just come to work with me and help me do that? And I said, okay, we can do that. Works fine with me. So we got together, and, man, his website was way, 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 way outdated. I mean, bless his heart. He was still rolling pictures, and his website looked like something you would looked at on an IBM computer 35 years ago. But it was still working for him, but it needed to be updated. So redid the whole website for him, built it all new photography, new products, worked on new products with him. And his big thing with wanting me to be involved with him was more based
input.
On the input, the people I knew, the help and being able to reach what not deer hunters, but land managers would want. And I went to people like my good friend Chuck Sykes, who was the commissioner over in Alabama, and talked to him about stuff because he had a TV show back then. And we did some stuff with some clients that we have down there, shot some stuff with him and Casey Shootman. You know, I was trying to find every avenue I can to save as much money as I can under the very tight budget that Dwayne had to try to grow this company in that way. And within 8 months, it was absolutely incredible at what it was doing. The shooting house side of it, the deer feeder side of it. It got to the point to where basically Dwayne shut down. And this is not because of me. This is just a God thing, bringing us all together and putting all our minds together to make this thing work. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed working with my brother. He was a pleasure to work with. And then what really made it neat for us and for me is his dad. I really love his dad to death. His mom, they are just fabulous people. Well, him and his brother wanted to take their dad on an elk hunt, and they just didn't have a good place. His brother lives in Montana. He's from down here, but moved to Montana. His brother wanted to try to find some places up there, but I said, hey, I got a great place in New Mexico, and you know, I believe if I make a couple of phone calls, I can probably get us in there. I won't be able to get us during the rut because that's pretty booked up, but I think we can get something during rifle season sometime in early November. And I had a very blessed week. It was actually 9 days of taking them up to the place that I truly love to hunt at and still hunt till this day. And I'll be up there in about 2 weeks and sharing that ranch with them and watching his dad shooting the elk and Dwayne get to shooting the elk. And we spent two years doing that together. And that was worth all of it to me, was being able to spend that time with his dad and being able to share a place that I've been fortunate to have been a part of and stepped foot on and have hunted for many, many years. And it's just a blessing to be able to share that with other people. But going back to working with Dwayne, it was an incredible time with him and a fun time watching that side of the business grow and with no video cameras. And don't get me wrong, there was stuff I was doing for his website and the social media, but it was nowhere as near what I was doing. And it was giving me time to clear my mind and also visit and be a part of other people. Actually, one of our customers was Will. Will Primos called me one day and he says, man, I need some feeders for my place. Here's what I'm thinking about doing. Here's what I have right now. And I'm wanting to feed these deer some protein feed in the off season. And we built some feeders to Dwayne's specs, and I mean to Will's specs and what he wanted and for his place over in the Delta. And, you know, it all comes full circle. Dealing with Wilbur on that business end was just like dealing with Wilbur when I was working with him before I was asked to leave in 09. It was good to see him. We got to visit on the phone and do business together. And I continued to work with Dwayne for several years. I actually wound up quitting the police department and working with Dwayne because the business was growing that fast and that quick.
Wow.
And that went on for a couple of years.
Trailer loads. I just remember those pictures of trailer loads of stands. Mm-hmm. Feeders, good grief.
Look, we would deliver shooting houses. We were delivering shooting houses to Montana. We got a client in Montana. We were delivering shooting houses to Montana. Some of them we shipped, some we delivered. We delivered shooting houses to Missouri. We delivered shooting houses and feeders to Florida, Oklahoma, Kansas. Mr. Paul Meeks, who used to be owner of API, Mr. Paul bought a bunch of stuff from us, and we went and put it on his farm over there. I knew the farm well, and his stepson bought stuff from us. And we had a ton of clients based on the people that Dwayne already had, plus the people that I brought to the table. So it was fun. One of the things that I miss about the business, number one, is my brother Dwayne. But number two is the time that him and I got to spend in the truck just traveling, talking, and sharing life together. And he'll say the same thing. Every time he talks to me, he says, man, I'm by myself again, traveling the road, delivering shooting houses and feeders. And he said, just ain't no fun by yourself. I said, I understand. But several years go by, and I was actually...
Well, Before you advance that story, I don't know. I think I know where it's going to, but
mm-hmm.
you know, we didn't really, you know, talk in depth about your time at Headhunters.
Mm-hmm.
We told the beginning of the story and how that all came about, but how many seasons did you hunt with them?
3 years, 3 seasons.
3 seasons. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We spent 3 seasons together. And fun seasons. I enjoyed it. One of the things that I enjoyed about it was Randy, Nate, was the guys. Randy, Nate, Stephen Phillips, whom I brought on board as basically their producer now, and John Skidmore. These four guys were all four of them were, other than Randy, who was probably the oldest at the time and still is. Those guys were young enough to be my sons, all of them. And it was a pleasure to be around those guys because of their morals, because of their lives, the way they handled themselves. They were good young men. You didn't feel like you were under any pressure. You didn't feel like you were getting treated like an old man because you were around them. It actually kept me young, being with them, being able to do what I did, whether I was behind the camera, in front of it, you know, if I was filming Randy or Nate, I would do whatever. And it was fun. It was a good time. We hunted the Midwest. We hunted Illinois. We hunted Montana. Some of the places that I used to hunt, I brought to the table, and places that Randy had. And we shared camp in a lot of places and had a lot of good times. And also got to spend some time with the Busby's family. I got to know Bill, who is, you know, even though we all know, whoever's listening, we know what he did last year and what he went through with that old elk situation, which I truly and honestly believe was probably just a mistake. I feel what they said online and what Matt said and what Bill said is he had all intentions to let the game warden know, but little did he know that the game warden was watching him, and I think he just made a mistake not doing it in a timely manner. I've been around Bill. I've hunted with him on his place. I've liked him. Whenever we went there, I spent more time with him than anybody, mainly because he liked to run dogs, and I enjoyed sitting in the truck with him just listening to them dogs. Kind of brought back memories of the kids.
I've always heard he was a great guy. Now
he is. He's a hard worker and has done well for himself and loves to share his place and what he has with other people. He would much rather do that than eat when he's hungry. He really would.
Well, what from the from Headhunters to the stands and feeders and stuff like that. I mean, personally, on the Headhunters thing? Did you just kind of leave? Did you just kind of?
I did.
I did it.
In such a way, the only person that knew at the time was Stephen Phillips. Yeah. I told Stephen what we were going to do, and I said, look, the first hunt this year, which would be in Montana, I'm going to let Randy and Nate know that this is going to be my last season. Because at the time, Dwayne, the business was growing, and I was a lot busier, and Headhunters was growing as well, and the traveling was getting more and more and more, and I didn't want to be gone that much anymore. I've been through that rope before. I've been through that tunnel. I've lived that life and, you know, growing older and trying to hang with them young boys. I needed to be home more. And so that was my decision. It was a hard decision because I enjoyed that. I enjoyed being around Randy. I enjoyed the success that Headhunters was bringing to him and his new family. He had not been married very long and was not far from having his first child. So, and Nate was doing great. Just seeing all these young guys grow in this business and doing good, it made me feel good to be a part of helping them grow and doing good in what they love to do. But I had to really just look back and say, you know what, it's time to slow back down and stay closer to home. And I did. And kept working with Dwayne. And, man, we were rocking and rolling. We were just as busy could be. In December of 2013, I was coming from the Mississippi Delta from delivering some feeders to a customer we have up in Clarksdale. And I was driving home in the truck, and I had just got finished putting some windows in another customer's shooting houses that we put up about a week prior, and we were waiting on windows to come in from our distributor where we get windows from. And the windows came in, so I told Dwayne, I'll just make one long trip, go deliver this, and on the way back, I'll stop and put the windows in their shooting houses. I called our client there and told him I would be passing by. He said, the gate's open. You know where everything's at. Good luck. Be careful. Thank you. Appreciate it. And so I did all that, and I was driving home that afternoon. And I guess about 3:30, my cell phone rings. I pick it up, and I look at my cell phone. It says Jimmy Primos. I said, what Jimbo's got going on? So I answered the phone. I said, hey, Jimbo, what's going on? He said, T-Roy, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm just traveling in the Delta, man, just heading home. I've been delivering some feeders and putting some windows in some shooting houses. I'm headed to the house. He said, look, I know you remember back in 2009, before you left, you told me that if I ever needed you to call you. I said, yeah, I did. I remember it like it was yesterday. He said, well, you're fixing to get a call from Mike Powell, who at the time was handling the television and video department at the time, and they were doing some transitions there. And this is right several days, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe a week after the team had left Primo's. And they had made, you know, the plans to do the whole Cottonmouth thing, and that was going to be a whole new realm of the way they were going to do video. And
Whoa. Let's stop this a second. All right. This is in December, right? All right. When you say the team had left, you're talking about Kevin, Keith, Chris, all them. They left in December?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, they left before that, but it got to the point. I don't know the exact date they left. I didn't get in. That's, to me, that was none of my business. I just answered Jimmy's questions for him. I know Lake Pickle was filming with them from the beginning of the season. So if I'm not mistaken, they left. If I'm not mistaken, don't correct me. If you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think they left in very late August, very beginning of September, right before elk season. Because Lake had filmed with Primos that elk season in the very beginning of deer season. And they had a couple of freelance guys that were working with them as well. And they were struggling with trying to get some things done and the way it needed to be done. And Jimmy's answer to their problems was, let's call Troy. That's what I'm guessing he said. That's kind of how I know Jimmy. And that led up to Jimmy calling me and letting me know that I was going to get a phone call from Mike Powell, that they were needing some help. Not to hire me full time, but they were looking at doing some contract work to see if things would work out.
Okay, all right. As soon as he finishes that statement asking you about the possibility of you coming back, well, I mean, what, not verbally, what was your first reaction? What was your first thoughts? Emotional reaction.
My first thought was, I know where it's coming from. It's coming from Jimmy. And I know without a shadow of a doubt that they have had to have had some sort of get-together meeting. At the time, Don Gibson was the executive producer of the show. And I'm most sure they were struggling at that time of the year to find freelance photographers because everybody's busy. Everybody's already booked up and got everything going. Everybody's already – they got their year and their calendar scheduled out. That's kind of how it runs in this business. If you don't schedule a year in advance, you're not making any money and you're going to starve to death as a freelance photographer. And if you're waiting around for work to come, good luck. So I'm most sure in a meeting, my name came up and Jimmy said, I'll call him. And, you know, Jimmy called me just to let me know that Mike and John Gibson would be calling me and asking me what they needed and expected me of me. And I said, sure. I said, I'll be willing to talk to Mike. He said, all right, well, he's probably going to call you. I said, but hold on before you get off the phone. I said, you made the comment, and I made the comment a long time ago, if you ever need me, call me. I said, is this you calling me or is it everybody else calling me? He said, well, a little of all of it. I said, but if it's just a little bit of you, when do you need me? He said, I need you yesterday, but I really need you tomorrow. I said, I'll be there in the morning if you need me. He said, well, I know you will. He said, but why don't you talk to Mike, get with John, and y'all kind of work the details out. I said, what do y'all need me to do? I said, look, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't want to hunt. If you need me to come and produce and run camera and help with the format of what you guys are trying to do now and have somebody come in there that already knows the system and understands the way we do things at Primo's, I'm in. But I don't want to hunt. I don't care to hunt. I don't want to be in front of the camera, and I don't think it's a smart thing to do that right now, and that's probably the way y'all are thinking. He said, well, you just talk to Mike and John, and you guys work it out. I said, okay, I'll do that. We got off the phone. 20 minutes later, Mike called me. Mike's a dear friend. Mike and I have never had any cross words in all my years at Primo's. We've always worked great together when he was head of marketing. We worked good on commercials. We worked good on advertising. We just worked good together. And I actually had talked to Mike many, many, many times in my time of being away from Primo's about actually Primo's being in partnership with Headhunters and doing some different things together. So we always stayed in contact. But when he called, I answered the phone, and he explained to me what was going on. And I said, man, when you need me? He said, man, we need you, like, right now. I said, let me make one phone call, and I'll call you back when I get home. I got a phone with him, and I talked to Dwayne, and I called Dwayne and told Dwayne what was going on. And I told him, I said, look, I'm not telling you I'm quitting you. I will continue to help you and work with you. But at this time of the year, we're not very, very busy. You know, but at that time of the year, deer feeders and everything that land managers are buying, they're not really spending any money till February and March of the following year. I said, but he said, Troy, I know how near and dear you are to this, and I know how good you are at what you do and how much you love what you've done for so long in your life. I wouldn't tell you or ask you not to do it, but I will tell you to use your best judgment, be careful, and make smart and wise decisions, and don't do this under any spite. And I said, no, there's no spite here. I feel like the retired quarterback that's been asked to come back and help teach the new rookies on the team the ropes and help them understand our playbook to bring this thing back to the top where it used to be.
You know, that is a very – hold on, Josh. Let me say this. Jump in. That is a very good point to end on, because I'm going to tell you something. At the time when you left, Primo's was the number two show on the Outdoor Channel. It may be either number one, number two with viewers. But by the time that you came back, man, it had dropped off the map, and I am not picking on anybody about that, but it had gone to crap. Crap.
What had happened was, and I don't mean that what had happened was, like we always say, what took place, there were so many changes happening at Primo's, whether it be employees, whether it be the video department, whether it be, you know, that it wasn't just one particular thing. There was a lot of things happening. The sale of the company, and then it selling again and going to a different owner. And there was a lot of different things changing hands and changing ways in the way that the business was being run, not only just in the video department, but as a company as a whole, the way the business was being run, the way vendors were being taken care of. There was a lot of things happening that were not good, and it needed another spark. It really did at that time.
Well, you remember, everybody, when you listen to this, you go out tomorrow and you say, oh, Troy Ruiz said the Primo show was crap while he was gone. No, he didn't say that. I said that, and I told Will that. I actually told Will that. I said, this was
I told Will somewhere, I don't remember when it was, somewhere around 11, 12, I guess it was when I was meeting with him one time. I said, Will, your TV show's gone. It's bad. And I remember telling you that I told them that. But Troy did not say that. So if you get the right mind to go out and say Troy said that, and that's the reason that they brought him back, you need to change it. Now, I said that. I said it was bad.
They had a lot of changes going on. And again, we talked about this in several podcasts before. You know, you look at professional baseball, football, basketball. Nobody stays on top forever. And when change takes place, whether it's financial change or leadership change or, whatever that change may be in an organization, sometimes change isn't good. Heck, you make changes in a church and attendance changes and falls. And
Troy, I'll say this. Josh Webb, see if you agree with this. You're an avid watcher of outdoor TV. You and I have talked about this before. The difference between the show from years ago until that time period, this is not picking on the guys at the time or whoever is editing or producing what was going on. Josh, we've talked about this before, but it turned into a killing show. It had no storyline to it at all. Hadn't we talked about that?
Yeah, a lot. Well, it was just everything you turn on. I mean, it wasn't just the Primos show during that time. Everything had gotten to that point. That was when that was at a point in time when everything was that way. When there was,
it was a flooded market, and you know,
well, it was a flooded market, and that's when there was the. If I remember right, that was, I mean, it was Outdoor Channel, and then maybe one other, and Pursuit was kind of coming along, and so every outlet was looking for something to give them a jump, and that's all any outdoor TV.
Well, when you start putting network in and networks, and when you put that many networks together, there's going to be the lower network, whoever is the last one to come on board or to start a new network, they're going to do whatever they can to grab any kind of programming they can. They'll give away airtime just to fill those slots. And you run into that as well. And you know, Primos, I mean, goodness gracious, if you really look at it and think about it, was one of the innovators of all of this. Wilbur's vision of how to just share with people his passion and to put together a group of people, you know, from years ago when it was Cuz and Ronnie Jolly and, you know, Mike Lingo and all those guys. For years and years, he always had a great group of guys that people liked and people enjoyed being a part of and sitting down and watching on TV, well, on DVD or VHS back then. And then for that thing to start deteriorating to the point to where folks like you were saying it was bad. I didn't even have the Outdoor Channel for those several years that I was gone from there. I didn't even really watch outdoor television. I tried to do everything I could to back away. Even though I was with Headhunters, I still didn't have it. Just like we talked earlier, Josh, when you were saying, you know, very seldom do you listen to any of your podcasts. It's the same with me. When you're editing this stuff, and I watch a show, you know, it takes me about 5.5 days to 6 full days to finish an episode. And after those 6 days, the last 2 days of that episode, I probably watch it 6 times straight through, audio pass, video pass. So the last thing I want to do is watch it on TV. The only reason we used to watch it back in the day is because when the Outdoor Channel first started inserting commercials and using their buy time, a lot of times they would get things messed up and you would have one of your competitors have their commercial in your show. I mean, gosh, we've had Night and Hell commercials run during our episodes before. And that's just a mistake, but that's what we used to watch, and that's we had to watch them. But now everything's done differently, and so it makes a difference. But the crew that was there when myself and Brad, and I made this statement before in 05, 06, and 07, that thing, man, I'm telling you, it was a well-oiled chain, and we were just cranking stuff out. Until this day, I still don't know how we did it, but we did it as a team. And in those latter years when things started falling apart and things started making a lot of changes, that well-oiled chain, that every now and then a link would get jacked up in it. It wasn't nothing that I did particularly for it as by myself. It was something, you know, when you start pulling links out of a chain, the chain gets weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. And as you pull one leak and one link and one link, and that's how it happens. I know where we're at now. Primos is back up there. We're strong. It's not any one thing that I did. Lake Pickles, man, he's done so well in his years of being here and learning and picking up on so much stuff. He's doing a great job in social media. Jordan Blissett, who's here now. We got Ben Bredingen, who we brought in from Minnesota, and just a great, great photographer, great, great producer. He understands the business at a young age that he is, and he gets it. He understands it. Very sharp guy, and he knows what he's doing. So we've got a good team now. We still got Wilbur on board. Although Wilbur and Jimmy are backing down and backing away, they're doing everything they can to make sure that we carry it on and keep it going. Because you and I, and we all know, when companies like this get bought out and the original owners fade out and fade away, things change, people have other ideas, corporate America makes changes, and it doesn't seem like it has the same feel that it used to have. And we're trying to make sure we keep that. Even though we phasing out some things, we still try to keep that thing strong. And the whole Cottonmouth idea gave us a whole new realm and a whole new format of being able to work something in that we feel intrigues the outside world, because the eye was in Kansas and Missouri, in South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, Michigan, all those parts of the country. When their deer season's closing, ours is just getting cranked, and those guys envy that we get to hunt deer during the rut in December and January when that rut's been over for a month and a half, 2 months. So we took that idea and just capitalized on it. Took us off the road so much, and now we're able to do it a lot closer to home. So it's been a blessing, and for me to get that phone call. And one of the things I had to do to be able to go back there before I went back full time, I worked that whole fall with them as a contract photographer, and we sat down, and John, myself, Jimmy, Brad, Mike Powell, we talked about me coming back full time. And because it was corporate, it took a little bit more time. I wound up going back full time March the 25th of that year, back to Primos. And but before I went back, Wilbur and I sat down together. I had to have a meeting with Will, and we sat down and talked and visited. He was able to share some things with me that we didn't have a chance to share in 2009, and I was able to share some things with him and visit with him on some things. And we just sat there, man, and we prayed, and we thanked God for this opportunity. We thank God that he kept that door open for us to be able to do something together again. And just, man, we just sat there and wept like it was tears of joy of understanding from where it all started to where it went, to how it's now come full circle to bring us all back together again to put something together that was a little twisted, but it was time to get the kinks out of this chain. Let's get this thing back going again and make Primos the business that it's always been, especially from the viewer standpoint when it comes to the television and video side.
Yeah, it is. It's so relatable, and not because I've gotten to know so many of you. I mean, not that at all. It's just, it's so relatable. And I know there'll be people listening to this and say, yeah, it's relatable because, crap, they're only hunting an hour from your house. And, you know, I mean, some of that, yeah, maybe. But it's just so, to me, it's taken those scenes. The shows now, to me, are just like an expanded scene from those old front porch scenes. Mm-hmm. That's what it's like to me. That's the feel of the show. It's laid back, it's goofing off, it's laughing at each other. And if you kill a doe, fine. If you don't kill anything, fine. If you know, I mean,
it's not, you know, and there's nothing wrong with going somewhere and killing big deer, but it's not going to the Midwest and only wanting to kill 150-inch deer, and it's just,
right.
It's not that. I laughed today is August, whatever the date is. Last week's episode, I laughed my butt off at you and Ben eating Thanksgiving supper in that ground blind. I laughed so dadgum hard at that.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff is just not, it's just not out there. You know, I mean,
no,
it's just,
and you know what? That is as real can get.
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
I had no idea Ben had all that stuff. I had some stuff in my back. Pack, but Ben had
this cat, Rocky, because he broke out stuff with cellophane wrappers on it and forks and knives and the whole deal. I was wrong.
Well, the only thing we were missing there was crystal and a bottle of red wine. But
I
love the deal. And this is how we think. And this is how Ben thinks as a producer, and we all think. Ben sees and understands and knows that, okay, Troy spends all year with Jimmy. He's catering to Jimmy. He's bringing him donuts. He's bringing him squincher. He's making sure he's got all this stuff. So I got an opportunity. You know, Jimmy was out of town, and we was one camera guy shy. So I called Ben. I said, "Dude, what you doing tomorrow?" He said, "Nothing." I said, "Why don't you come to Cottonmouth and you and I hunt together?" "All right, cool." I said, "We could duck hunt and try to do a little deer hunt." And I said, "He said you got anything happening?" I said, "No." I said, "The weather's not the greatest in the world." I said, "But let's just go." I said, "Everybody else is going. We might as well go." So he came, and that's what we did. And you heard me tell the story about that deer that I killed. That's one of the biggest deer we killed. And that day, that very day, we moved that line and checked the trail cameras and had no pictures of any bucks in there other than that buttonhead.
And
I'm sitting there eating garlic chips, and this deer walks out. God bless.
Well, and that's, you know, and that's another thing, too, talking about that. Y'all move the blind, y'all, and stuff. It is such a, it's so well put together with, it's very palatable, the show, watching it, it's easy to connect with, but it's so informative without pounding the, this is what you have to do to be successful, tips type stuff down your throat, right. that everybody sees. You know what I mean? I mean, y'all got on there and said, look, today at lunch, we moved that blind, and this is why we did it, and what I like about it is what y'all continue to do is this is why we do this. This is why we do that. It's not, this is why you should do it. This is why, you know, we tried this. It didn't work. We tried that. It did work. But I'm telling you, and Rocky, you need to watch that episode because he hands Troy, I don't even know what all y'all are eating, but he hands Troy some food. He said, "Here's your dinner," and pulls out dinner. I'm talking about dinner. And then he gets out a baggie, and he said, "Here's your fork." And, of course, my mind is thinking plastic fork. You can hear it clinking around. I'm talking about he brought the silverware out there.
No.
I laughed.
We go all out, man.
Look,
there was one time we had all of Jimmy's stuff hanging in the tree for him when he got there. Yeah, we had a drink, we had Coke, we had donuts and honey buns. But you know, here's what makes it work. It's how you think and what makes people relate. Cottonmouth itself has become its own entity in that show. It's a character, and you have to look at it that way. When we started working on this, okay, Cottonmouth is a character. For me, one of the biggest characters in that show is the Skin and Shed. Everybody knows now when you see that Skin and Shed sign, that establishing shot, we're either fixing to go hunting, we're coming back from hunting, or something's fixing to happen inside that Skin and Shed. Who in a hunting club in today's world, whether you're in a big hunting club or a little hunting club, the most sought after hung out place at a hunting club is the Skin and Shed or the Skin and Wrap.
That's it.
That's where everybody waits for everybody, and that place has become its own entity. So you build the personality about the place. People's personalities are going to shine no matter what. Jimmy's the camp curmudgeon. Will, who used to be a visitor every now and then because at one time he had his own place. Well, when he sold his place, now it's time for Will's character to come over to Cottonmouth. Jimmy's not happy about it and still ain't happy about it.
that's not written in the script. That's for real.
Oh man, it works, and it really is fun to watch.
I'll tell you this: the afternoon that I showed up, I'll never forget it. I packed everything in my truck. My wife was helping me get all my stuff put in my truck. I left here and drove up to Cottonmouth and walked in the door of the house, and Brad was in there on the phone. Everybody else that went hunting, him and I were going to hang some stands that afternoon. And I just walked up in there. We fist pumped each other like we had just hunted the day before. And it had been since January of 2009 since we ever been in a tree or did anything together. And I'll never forget the first afternoon we got in the tree together. It was like we hadn't missed a beat. And I said this before, there's been many, many people that I've been able to spend in trees with when it comes to doing what we do. And there's never been two people that I've ever seen that mesh together in doing what we do and understand what each other's thinking at any given moment than us two. And it was the same way. We got in the tree that day and visited for just a short moment. And when it was business time, both of us just shut up. He was hunting and I was doing my job. And all we ever have to say to each other is yes or no. And sometimes it's not even that. Sometimes I just tap him on his shoulder. Once for yes, two for no. He knows what I'm saying. And we've got that down packed. And, you know, him and I don't hunt that much together on the show. Lake and him spend more time together because them two are just characters. It's more me and Jimmy. I think I'm stuck with Jimmy now because I love Mr. Jimmy, but I'm the only one that can tolerate Mr. Jimmy, and I know exactly what he wants on his sandwiches. So that's the key.
Well, it's hard to find stuff like that where it just works so well together. But again, I think that's again why it works so well from a consumer standpoint. For somebody sitting out watching it, is because that's. I mean, it just takes me back to being just raised in a deer camp setting. I mean, you had somebody who was always a grouch and somebody who was always running late and somebody who never wanted to leave a tree. And it's just, but you're exactly right. You ended the day at the skinning shed, whether somebody killed something or not. And it's just the way that, it's a fun way to grow up. It's a fun way to spend time.
Well
Troy.
Go ahead, buddy.
No. You finish that thought, and then I got a question.
At the end of the day, we're there to produce a quality product from the television show all the way down to the products that we sell at Primos. The television show is a grand marketing tool. If you want to talk about business, that's what it is. It's a grand marketing tool, a powerful marketing tool for the Primo's name and the Primo's product and the Primo's family and the Primo's lifestyle. It's something Wilbur thought of way back in the early 80s and brought it to fruition and made sure that he put the right people in the right places and kept those teams going. You know, nothing's forever. This won't last forever for me, for Wilbur, for Jimmy, for none of us. Everything's apt to change. There will be change. There's going to be, you know, I'm not going to be there forever. Wilbur won't be there forever. Things are going to change, and who knows how long Primos will be around. I hope the next generation, i.e. Lake, Jordan, and whoever comes after them, continues it on and just continues it up at the top to bring new people into our tradition, not our sport. I don't call it a sport because it's a tradition. It's a business in what we do. But we all did this through the love of hunting and through God's grace of giving us the ability to make a living, earn a living, and doing something that everybody thinks, gosh, if I could just do what those guys do. It's still work. It's still business. And it has its moments just like anything. But at the end of the day, it's what we do and it's who we are and it's, you know, when you go to extravaganzas or you listen to people at different shows you go to and you hear about people telling stories from the truth 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and remember this and remember that, and you think, man, you just really don't realize how many people you touch in doing what you do. And same thing what you're doing with podcasts. It's another platform. It's another tool for us to share our stories. And that's pretty much all we do and that's all we have to do in our life is to share our story with those out there that are willing to listen. And you guys give us this platform right here to do this. So what a blessing.
Well, what I was going to say is there's some questions that I would like to ask. We're kind of out of time tonight. Is it okay if we do a wrap-up episode next week for about 20 or 30 minutes?
Absolutely.
I don't want this to be the last one because, I have some questions for you. And there may be some things throughout this story that you've thought of that you need to tell that you missed out on.
Oh, there's tons. And it's not what I missed out on. It's just I think there's so much there that, you know, it'd be like, I mean, sit down and try to get Wilbur to tell you everything that happened in the last 15 years, whether it be business, whether it be life. And that's for anybody, not Will, not me, Rocky, anybody. I mean, there's never enough time to tell the whole story. We try to tell stories in such a way that we know it's going to impact somebody. We know that it's going to make somebody feel like they're a part of what you're doing and who you are. It's relatable, just like Josh said earlier. The show is relatable, and that's what we do. And when you share your story, you want to share stories where people can go, I get that, because I've been in that predicament at one time or another in my life. I understand what this guy's saying, and he's for real. He's not perfect. He's for real. And you know, Wilbur and Cuz, it was Cuz's idea to name it the truth about hunting. And, you know, no better way to share the truth than to just share truthfully who you are and what you stand for in this world we live in, because there's a lot of fakes out there.
Well, we'll do that. We'll do a wrap-up episode, because there's a couple of really, really important questions that I want to ask you before you get away. I know the answer to some of them, but I want you to talk about it on the podcast. So we're going to do a wrap-up episode next. It'll be next Tuesday. For you to hear it, it'll be next Wednesday. But, Troy, thank you again. Josh, thank you for being here. And we want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast. Hold up, Troy.
Howard.
Go ahead. No, you need to go on and do this whole closing. Go ahead.
You already took it. We can't now. I mean, I was sitting here mouthing it the whole way, and now you stole it from me. See, my only chance to make it big time, Rocky gets me.
I feel like
Steve Harvey when he called the wrong winner at the Miss America thing. That's
yeah,
what I
Miss
like
America.
About.
You're going to do the opening and closing next week, so we'll let you back in on that.
I'm going to be down in South Louisiana this week, so I'm going to practice it. And next week, here's what we're going to do. When I do the opening next week, you're going to have the question, is it Rocky or is it T-Roy? That's going to be the question.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, thank you again for being here. I really enjoyed it. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition End of the Line podcast, powered by Duck South, Duck South.
You got these four things that you've been running from. You either love it or guess you don't. You're such a pretty thing.